This isn't just a game, it's a once-in-a-generation event. The Harlem Globetrotters 100-year tour. Celebrate 100 years of high-flying dunks, 100 years of show-stopping moves, and 100 years of changing the game. Bring the whole family and be part of the legacy. This game is once in a century. Be there at Schottenstein Center on December 27th. Go to harlemglobetrotters.com for your tickets to the 100-year tour.
Greetings, travelers!
I can't believe we're already in December, Mark. What the heck?
And it's chilly outside. We've had our Thanksgiving leftovers. We're all just kind of rolling over with everything. Oh my gosh, I am stuffed full of love.
You're stuffed full of something, all right. No, I'm. You know what I get excited about this time of year is, first of all, food. I feel like we get epic amounts of food for like 2.5 months, but s'mores. I have more and more excuses to make s'mores. And for those listeners who listen to us all the time, you travelers, you know I have a s'mores addiction problem. Yeah. And I got these marshmallows that are like this big. Like I brought them in and the hubby went, that's like, do you even have a cracker big enough for that? And I'm like, not the point.
Yeah. That's one of those where, you know, you have three marshmallows, but you go, but this is only one. This is only one. It's the size of six, but it's only one.
Yes. It is huge. So that I stocked up on the last candy corn that I found still lingering around the shops. Cause I feel like, you know, you can Black Friday the candy that you like to eat.
Yeah, and this is my time of year for white chocolate, hot chocolate.
Ooh, yeah.
But I do have important shopping news, and that is Cracker Barrel has Nuka-Cola Quantum. So you can actually get Fallout Nuka-Cola Quantum in the bottles at Cracker Barrel for like $1.80. So
how have you not purchased these for me?
I've got a dozen here, so I'm going to give you one for Christmas, but all right, fine.
Oh, you got a dozen and you're going to give me one?
Yeah.
I hope everybody's hearing how this relationship goes.
That's how it works. I mean, they're for me and others, but you know, you're getting one. So that's what I think of you. $1.80.
That's fine. I'm going to have to go to Cracker Barrel now very soon and resolve this problem for myself.
Yep. And now if they just get the Sunset Sarsaparilla for us New Vegas fans, we'd be good. So, All right. But and it is only the Quantum. Sorry, gang. No Classic, no Nuka-Cola Classic, and no Nuka-Cola Cherry. But, you know.
It's a start.
It's a start. It's a start. And the fact that they're carrying it, buy it up so that they know that we want more. So
yes. And yes, please.
By the great Jones Soda, so it's, you know, it's going to be good. So
yeah. Hypothetically, travelers, if you're coming to see us in the new year and you wanted to bring a chilled version of that, we would not mind having a beverage with you. Just throwing that out there.
They did announce that this year's Fallout meetup, they did the one in Vegas, you know, outside of Vegas in Good Springs, of all places, last year. The new one is going to be in West Virginia. They're doing it in Sutton, where the Flatwoods Monster is. So.
Oh, wow. We might have to make an appearance at that. That would be fun.
I'm looking into it. We're looking into it. So keep an eye on eerietravels.com for our future visits and places. But and
we're getting that. I will say the mastermind behind all of us is Ms. Carrie Schultz, and she is helping to get us organized on our events and all kinds of things. And so we're excited. We're going to be lots of places this year, lots of new places. So should be fun.
And if you've got a place you want us to go, and or you know, reach out to them and have them invite us, or message us at Erie Travels and we can see if we can try to arrange it.
Yeah, you can mention that says info@erietravels.com. Look at that.
Yeah.
Okay, Erica, yeah.
I have breaking news.
You have breaking news?
Yes, I have breaking news. The restoration has been approved for Merlin's Mound.
What is that?
Okay, it's a Neolithic mound in England.
Okay, that was a really big word. What does that mean?
Very prehistoric, basically, before we have modern written history. The Marlborough Mound, also known as Merlin's Mound, it's in Marlborough College, not anything to do with cigarettes. The college recently applied for permission to remove all the 20th century buildings that have been cut into the side of that monument over the years.
Okay.
So it's in Wiltshire, and Wiltshire Council gave them the go-ahead to put stuff together to get rid of a carpentry workshop, toilets, and a water meter and pump that are all going to be destroyed. And while they're doing that, they're hopefully going to maybe find some traces of medieval, post-medieval waterways, some other stuff. And it's basically going to make it more back to its historical roots. It was built probably about 4,000 years ago. Pretty crazy. I mean,
that's exciting. That's a place next time I'm over there, I'm going to have to visit because it might be literally magical.
Yeah. It's supposedly where Merlin is buried, the great wizard Merlin. And the town's motto is Latin, Ubi nunc sapientis ossa Merlini, which is where now are the bones of the wise Merlin.
Oh, that's very cool.
Yeah, so we'll see. And basically, year 2000, they started the trust to fix this. And it's now nationally important, so they're going to restore it. So very, very good.
I love it. So I know that you mentioned, because we're heading into the holiday season, and we hope our travelers celebrate however you want to celebrate. I know I'm going to do a Yule log thing this year. Not sure if you and Carrie are going to join me, but super excited for that. And you know, one of my favorite things I've decided is I am bringing the Yule cat into my life again this year. Because, you know, I do love a giant cat that'll eat you if you're not given clothes. So where are we going, though, Mark? Because I feel like you've got something special planned for me.
I do. I do. In honor, we've been invited to tell ghost stories at the Archive of the Strange and Unusual in Franklin, North Carolina, for their Krampus night on December the 5th.
Oh, wow.
We will be telling ghost stories there, but that got me thinking about A Christmas Carol. And they were like, oh, you're going to tell about the three ghosts. And I'm like, wait. Ebenezer's visited by four ghosts. And they're like, no, three. And I'm like, no, four ghosts. I will die on this hill. There are four ghosts because he gets visited by Marley. Then he gets visited by Ghosts of Christmas Past, Ghosts of Christmas Present, Ghosts of Christmas Future. Four ghosts.
It's four ghosts. He gets visited and told three other ghosts are going to show up.
Yes.
I partially know this because a friend of mine, Mike, shout out, you know who you are, told me to watch this, a retelling of A Christmas Carol with Will Ferrell and Ryan Reynolds.
Good stuff.
That's a musical. And so that happened.
Yep.
I don't know how I feel about it. I have so many mixed emotions about it that it's best I don't even discuss it right now. But I will confer, and the hill I will die on with you is there are legitimately four ghosts.
Four ghosts. Thank you. Thank you. And then,
So
I always just think back to light the lamp, not the rat. Light the lamp, not the rat. All right.
Am I going to get visited by some Christmas ghosts?
We are going to visit four Christmas ghosts for you. So
that sounds terrifying. And I already know I cannot nope out of the situation. We all see, this is how Mark drags me in. So,
and then because it's A Christmas Carol, after the break, we will also dig into A Christmas Carol that everybody's forgotten, but used to be one of the most popular Christmas carols of all time. So, and it's got a very tragic story. So it'll be perfect for us for Erie Travels.
Oh, I love it. I love it. Okay. So do I get Marley first? Who do I get first?
Well, this is your first visitation. So we're going to go across this wonderful bay in San Francisco. We're going to go to this 22-acre island that I'm sure you're familiar with. Alcatraz.
You're sending me to jail. That's the first visit. Starting in Alcatraz.
Well, Marley is covered in chains, right?
He's
forged in life.
I don't like how this is beginning, but I'm along for the ride as per usual.
All right. Well, basically, we got to talk a little bit about Alcatraz's history there.
Yeah.
It was the island of Pelicans, and the Spanish made it a prison, and it does have the lowest escape rate in the United States history because it's surrounded by frozen waters, powerful currents, and with a little heightened security and some special help from some sharks. And most people aren't going to try to escape from that.
Well, even if they do, they generally don't make it to shore. So,
yep. And some people have fled, and sadly only to die horrific deaths out there. And now this is supposed to be extremely haunted, right? This is like a bucket list for many haunt aficionados. It was closed in 1963. So, ghost hunters, history buffs, everybody loves going to this place. And
I think that's one of those, we talk about it a lot, but I feel like that's one of those places that has so much negative energy just from what it is and the nature of it.
Yeah.
That it probably has a lot of something there.
Yeah. The Spanish explorer Juan Manuel de Leya, he was the one who named it in 1775, called it, the Island of Pelicans. I'm not even going to attempt to say the Spanish on that. But later on, it became known as The Rock. Thank you to Sean Connery for making that.
I love that movie. That's a hill I will die on. It is a terribly good movie. That's what I'm going to say.
I love the theory that's actually him as James Bond. And he's been arrested and put on the island. Because they didn't really say his history and who he was and all that. So he could still be James Bond trapped in Alcatraz. I thought that was actually kind of a neat premise.
The movie, there are some things, but it's got a really nice cast, but we digress. Okay.
We digress. So we're going to go back a little bit further before European settlement. This was the Miwok tribe and the native population there. They saw Alcatraz as the place where evil spirits gathered.
Well, that's not good to even start this whole thing. Yeah.
Yeah, so they loved the seabirds. They would hunt them and gather their eggs, but they stayed away from the island, right? But what they found out was this is the perfect place to send anybody we don't like. So any of our unsavory members of our tribe, let's banish them to that island. So it's always been a prison.
England tried this with Australia, but continue on.
So 1850s, America comes in and goes, that's a good idea. Let's put some stuff on. That's a pretty defensible position. So they originally built it as a lighthouse and a military outpost. And they actually spent like $8,000 back in 1850s money. I'm not exactly sure how much that is, but that's a lot.
I can look that up while you're continuing.
Okay, that was what they made their lens, their Parisian glass lens for the lighthouse out of. And originally it was to hold Confederate sympathizers after the Civil War. But then after that, as America expansion continues, they're like, hey, let's build this up. Now, 1895, there's a land dispute in Arizona. So they bring 19 Hopi Native Americans held there while they were dealing with that issue. And soldiers.
By the way, it's 325,000 just for.
There you go. That's how much it cost to put that lighthouse up. So soldiers who joined the Filipino army during the Spanish-American War were held there on the island in 1898. Now, 1912, that's where they build the big facility, 600 inmates. 22 years later, it became a federal prison. And everybody, the most notorious, infamous mobsters kept there. And supposedly no more than 250 prisoners were there at any time. That was so that he could pay close attention to the people they had there. So, of course, we've got Al Capone, Machine Gun Kelly, Robert the Birdman Stroud. There's a lot of big names were sent to Alcatraz. And it was not ever meant to be permanent homes for everybody. It was most to be just a prison for the prison system. So they were given limited privileges, kept under close watch, because that's what they were. But it was, you know, there was a large riot at one point in 1946. In 1963, there was the famous Escape, that great film, Escape from Alcatraz. Two brothers, Clarence and John Anglin, and then another friend, Frank Morris, they escaped. Their bodies were never found. They were presumed to have drowned. But and a year later, 1964, the year the prison closes because the cost of importing food and other resources of the island is too much work, right? And so now we've got all the ghost stories. We've got a banjo being heard there. We have supposedly where Al Capone played the banjo. It's really, that's our ghost there. Come on. Yeah. Yeah,
like, we talk- like who ranks the highest in popularity? That's our cosplaying ghost there. Ghost.
Yep. So cell blocks A, B, and C, disembodied cries, moans, cell 14D. That's where a man was once found strangled. It's supposed to be the most haunted. But everything, before it was on everybody's list of must-see places, it had an unexplained chilling event, and that was on Christmas Eve.
Oh.
A man appears to the warden and all the people at the warden's Christmas party. So, now, the warden James Johnston did not believe in these stories of ghosts at Alcatraz. However, this quickly changed his mind, right? So he had already run the federal prisons in California and Folsom Prison Blues, and oh, wow. San Quentin. And he came to Alcatraz in 1934. Now, he offered inmates rehabilitation through education, drug treatment, and employment programs.
Oh, wow. So
very progressive. And the inmates loved him, except he did love solitary confinement. He really loved putting people in solitary confinement. But in the 1940s, not exactly which year, because the story is vague, but okay, he was having his annual Christmas Eve party, and a man with a black brimmed cap, mutton chops, and a gray suit that looked like the Victorian era. Okay. The fire goes out. And if you've been on Alcatraz at all, you know how cold that gets. Even in the summer, there's a breeze through there and it gets chilly.
Yeah.
So this was a deep cold, everybody said, like a deeper, deeper cold. And everybody just gasps. And then this man just appears like out of a fog. And now he disappears instantly, just kind of points over at the warden.
Okay.
So who was he? Now, there are dozens of witnesses to this story, right? This is not just some phantom randomness that somebody saw once in a wall or something. So,
yeah.
All right. They figured it out after doing some research because, hey, that's what you do. January 21st, 1857, the Nevada Democrat newspaper reports that a man named Michael Mann had drowned off Alcatraz's coast. He and his two assistants were heading from Alcatraz to North Beach. After an hour of rowing and getting lost amid the fog, they saw the light from that lighthouse and decided to turn back. And then a series of larger breakers burst upon the side of the small rowboat, and he was lost in the chaos and never seen again. So supposedly, that's his ghost that's trying to come back. And is he forced to be there amongst all these evildoers when he was just a fisherman who helped supply the island? Who knows? But his ghost is supposedly seen every year at the ruins of the warden's house on Christmas Eve.
Wow.
So there is our ghost of Christmas. That is your chained ghost, which would be your Jacob Marley. So.
I see that. You know what's interesting about that, though, is I wonder if it's almost, because it sounds like what you like to call a stone tape, right?
Yes, that's exactly what I think it is.
Where he just keeps reappearing because he can, right?
Yep. And if that's he drowned weird. Off the water, why is he suddenly there at the warden's house? Why is he pointing to the warden? I don't know. It doesn't make a lot of sense. But, I love a ghost story that doesn't make a lot of sense.
Well, also, it might be the only thing that kind of resembles a residence versus a big, scary building.
Yep. Yep. So, exactly.
You never know.
You never know. All right.
Next.
You ready for the next ghost? Are you ready to be visited by the ghost of Christmas past?
Another. Yes. 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 Sorry.
Ghost of Christmas past.
Yep. Got it.
All right. All right. So this one is probably the most famous ghost image for a long time. And that was taken in 1936. And it shows the ghost of the brown lady who haunts Rainham Hall in England. It is considered to be one of the most convincing of all photographs of ghosts.
Okay, hold on. I'm going to Google it.
Yeah, the ghost image of the brown lady of Rainham. R-A-Y-N-H-A-M. Rainham Hall, which is in Norfolk, England.
Yeah.
Okay. The brown lady is the ghost, supposedly the ghost of Lady Townsend, who was married to Charles Townsend, a man known for his fiery temper. And when he learned of his wife's infidelity, he punished her by imprisoning her on the estate. And he never allowed her to leave its premises, not even to see her children. And she remained there until her death when she was an old woman. Now, over the next two centuries, her ghost was repeatedly seen wandering through Rainham Hall, suggesting that she's never left. And famously, in the 19th century, King George IV saw her while staying at the hall. He said she stood beside his bed wearing a brown dress, and that her face was pale and her hair disheveled. In 1835, Colonel Loftus, he says he sighted her. He was visiting the house for Christmas holidays and was walking to his room late one night when he saw the figure standing in the hall in front of him. The figure was wearing the brown dress. He tried to see who she was, and then she simply vanished.
Oh, wow.
And then he saw her again a week later. This time he got a better look at her, and he said she was an aristocratic-looking woman wearing the same brown satin dress. And he said her skin glowed with a pale luminescence, but to his horror, her eyes had been gouged out.
I don't love that part. That's interesting, though. That picture is amazing.
Isn't it incredible? Yeah. We'll get to that in a minute. But so Colonel Loftus shared this story a lot, right? And so a lot of other people started coming, saying, hey, we saw it too. And an artist drew a painting of the brown lady. And it was actually hung in the room where she was frequently seen, right? And now Captain Frederick Marryat, who was a novelist at the time, he came a few years later, and he's like, I'm staying in that room, right? Even then, paranormal tourism was a thing, right? And he studied the painting and wanted to see her, but she didn't appear that night, and he was very disappointed. But a few days later, he was walking down an upstairs hallway with two other guests, and he saw her, and she was carrying a lantern as she glided past them as they ran behind a door. They were looking for her, but then they panicked.
Oh, my goodness. Yeah.
So they pulled a ghost adventures. No, run. We finally saw a ghost. Now, Marryat finally, he said that she grinned at them in a diabolical manner before she disappeared. And then what did he do? He shot her with a pistol that he happened to be carrying.
Okay. So just to reiterate, travelers, things that do not work against ghosts.
Yes.
That.
Yeah. He shot the wall behind her. Right. Okay. So, fun stuff. All right. So two photographers, 1936. She's seen a few more times, but September 19th, 1936, day before my birthday, Captain Provend and Indra Shira were on assignment for a magazine called Country Life. And this is what happened, according to their story. Captain Provend took one photograph while I flashed the light. He was focusing for another exposure, and I was standing by his side just behind the camera with the flashlight pistol in my hand, looking directly up the staircase. All at once, I detected an ethereal veiled form coming slowly down the stairs. Rather excitedly, I called out sharply, quick, there's something there. I pressed the trigger of the flashlight pistol After the flash and on closing the shutter, Captain Pravon removed the focusing cloth from his head and turned to me and says, "What was all the excitement about? You didn't see anything." But when they developed the picture, they found that they had captured the image of the ghostly woman, the brown lady drifting down the stairs, and it was published in Country Life, December 16th, 1936.
Wow.
Now, skeptics say it's fake. Right? He says it's just nothing more than two images composited together. But the ghosts have been seen there for years, decades. And they weren't there to tell the story of the ghost. They were there just to take pictures of the house.
Wow. That's kind of amazing. That would be fun. But I think there's a lot of stuff. I think no matter what you're attempting to do, you end up with, like, even these people who get the weird pictures behind them, like in between and stuff, people go, "Oh, that's fake. Oh, it's double exposure." I'm like, it is a digital camera. So I agree. What do you think, Mark? Do you think it's fake?
I do not. The history there says that there is some strange stuff. I mean, but cameras of old did come up with some crazy artifacts and did make some crazy things. I do think they got a picture of something. I don't know if it was a ghost. I want to say the camera picked up something that the guy in the camera couldn't see, but the other guy was detecting. As we said, some people see them, some people don't. Although, you know, skeptics will say that it's also, you know, she really wasn't seen much before 1936, but here I am just reading out sightings of her. So she's been seen several times, and she's been seen a lot in the 60s. A few people saw her. But the lady, she was the Marchess of Townsend. She said that she'd seen her several times. But her ghost is supposedly also at Sandringham House. But there she's young, like before she, you know, her happy self before she turned into the brown lady. So
yeah, I don't think that's a thing though. I don't think they bounce.
I think it's a different ghost that they're just misidentifying. You know?
Yeah.
Yeah. Well,
I like it.
I think we're having fun, but before we get into our ghost of Christmas present and our ghost of Christmas future, I think we should take a quick break. What do you think?
I love that idea, and we'll be right back with that after a word from our sponsors.
This isn't just a game, it's a once-in-a-generation event. The Harlem Globetrotters 100-year tour. Celebrate 100 years of high-flying dunks, 100 years of show-stopping moves, and 100 years of changing the game. Bring the whole family and be part of the legacy. This game is once in a century. Be there at Schottenstein Center on December 27th. Go to HarlemGlobetrotters.com for your tickets to the 100-year tour.
Oh, it's too much fun.
Yep. All right. So the next one's going to be quick because I'm not going to do the full history of it and everything because we're saving this for a future episode. But I had to mention this ghost for Christmas.
Okay.
You grew up in California.
Yes, I did.
You've been to Long Beach often?
Yeah. I used to go swimming there all the time.
Okay. And did you ever go to the Queen Mary?
Yes.
Yeah.
It was a terrifying experience.
Okay. Well, so, you know, the ship converted to a hotel and an attraction in the 1960s, right?
Mm-hmm.
Now, there's a specific area on the boat. There's so many ghosts on the Queen Mary, right? It's supposed to be one of the most haunted locations in America, in the world, even. It's always in the top 10 and all that. It's got a lot of history, the Queen Mary.
Mm-hmm.
It traveled quite a bit. It was a scene of many a tragedy and many of a family drama and a historical drama. Like I said, we're going to have to do a whole episode on the Queen Mary at some point. So I don't want to get too much into that. But there is one area that there is an entity that has been there, and it has been given the name Jackie. And it is specifically in and around the ship's second class pool area.
Oh, now,
there are several versions of this story. And that's because the storytellers there tell it a little differently over the years. That's how we learn about these. We've learned, how much do we learn about these legends like that? It's why everyone's like, that's not how I heard it. Well, yeah, because every storyteller has got to have their right. So,
yeah.
So supposedly this young girl haunts this pool area, and original stories was that she drowned in the pool during the ship's operational years. And some people have said that, oh, she slid on the banister and fell and broke her neck. So there's a couple different versions of it. And she's often heard rather than seen. Her voice sounds like a young child echoing near the pool area. It's usually some giggling, singing, and then sometimes calling out for her mother. And paranormal enthusiasts and investigators have all gotten tons of EVPs of her in the area. You know, I'm not a big fan of EVPs, but when there's this many corroborating the story, I start going, okay, there may be something to this. So,
okay.
Now the visitors also say sometimes that there's a very chilling atmosphere and cold spots in the areas when she's noticed. But most people say that she's very playful, but then there's this feeling of sorrow when they're around her. And, you know, there's just so many frequent interactions with her.
I don't like this. I'm trying to be brave, but I don't. I will say I was younger and not really completely understanding my empathy and stuff when I went on the Queen Mary. And I remember getting nauseous and thinking I was seasick.
Yeah.
I don't get seasick.
Yeah.
I did a little bit in the Drake shake, but
anybody would be bad there. Yeah. So, but now the Queen Mary here, the big thing about her, I think she's an intelligent haunting because she interacts with people. She's not just a stone tape. She talks to people. She will interact. She'll play with people. There's a little more than just stone tape there. Now,
oh yeah. Well, it could be a little more than a ghost too. We have no idea.
Yeah. And I've heard a couple different versions of the story. When I was back there in the early 2000s, they said that she died sliding down the rail, lost her balance, fell. And the first time we went there, there was this strong smell of chlorine and swimming pool chemicals. But the pool hasn't been used in decades. And the second time we went, I didn't smell that. I was like, hey, is that gone? And they're like, what? It's never supposed to smell like that. I'm like, oh, I just assumed it was because it's an old pool. And maybe I was having some sort of weird, you know, sense there. We did see some orbs when I was there with the team. Again, I'm not sure what orbs are. I don't necessarily think they're ghosts. I think there's some sort of energy that we don't understand that is more common in these areas. And I don't know. It's there's supposed to be four or five entities in that area. Each one a little different, but Jackie's supposedly there during Christmas, always during the holidays. That's when she's seen the most. And definitely a bucket list location if you can get it for the holidays, gang.
So. Yeah, no, I absolutely agree for traveling and stuff. And you know what? I just had a random thought, but we're going to continue on this journey. So we'll put a pin in this random thought, travelers, but I would love to know what you think. What if orbs are actually messages that had so much intensity when somebody passed that they're sort of about the place? And when people are hearing things and stuff, it's that. Wouldn't that be cool? Anyway, we're going to put it in there.
I mean, the fact that so many people see them out in the woods makes it interesting to me.
Well, it's true, but look how many people did die outside. I mean, for years and forever, like, there have been battles, there have been things. What if they're just these, like, intentions, like we say, but they were so intense that they are there until it gets to the person it needs to be at. That's just an idea. Anyway.
No, I love it. Well, we'll do a deep dive into orb theory at some point. Maybe we get an expert on somebody who's
if you're an orbs expert, reach out to us at info@airytravels.com because we're curious, or if you know of one, send us who it is because we'd love to have them on the show.
And not talking about the picture you took of your dusty barn filled with insects and you suddenly got orbs on your camera. That's no. We're talking about visible orbs that
are not. A scientist, maybe.
Yeah, somebody would be nice. All right.
Yeah, so that would be cool.
Get your boy Neil deGrasse to come on, talk about orcs.
So Mr. Tyson, you should join us. It's been almost a year. Do you remember me? I'm pretty unforgettable. So let's do this.
All right. So this next one, I'm not even going to attempt to pronounce any of the names. I will post them in the notes.
Okay.
Because this is from the one place in the UK that I cannot pronounce anything that they say or write, and that's Wales. So you guys and your signs in Wales, you look like you're perfectly cheating at Scrabble. You add more C's and K's and stuff than if you just added some umlauts, we'd think you're in Norway. Come on, this is crazy. So
that's true. That's all right. True.
So this is our Ghost of Christmas Future. Because I did, you know, the Queen Mary, she's there every year. So that's why I
put her
kind of Christmas present. So now we're into Christmas Future.
Okay.
So, but this story takes place in the past. So it was a dark night, and this farmer lives in the area. He'd been drinking and having a good Christmas time, and he's a little shaken. He's a little tired, though, because he's walking through the dark on his way home on this Welsh countryside. And suddenly, there's a strange noise. And I wish we had sound effects for this, but I don't do that type of podcast.
I was going to say, we are not that fancy.
Not that fancy.
No.
And especially since Callie is off for the holidays and Bo is still off. We'll another day.
I was going to say, our production value is at the level that Erica and Mark can do when left to their own devices.
Yes. So this is 1910. He's walking through and he hears this strange noise, something he has never heard. And it sounds like a strange whistle or wail. So he's thinking maybe it's a banshee or something else across the thing. He's never heard anything like it. And then he hears this hissing sound and a chugging sound, a rhythmic chugging. And he sees a strange light in the distance that's coming down at him like a great beast. And then he looks at it, and it is an iron dragon on wheels. And it is crossing his farm and goes right past where his house is. And he's stunned. And then the horses panic and flee into town because they, too, have never seen anything like this.
I want to say something so desperately because I have a terrible joke, but go ahead.
When he gets close, it vanishes, smoke billowing into the sky, and the wheels of this thing were screeching as it goes away. Your immediate thought?
He's being attacked by the Polar Express.
It's a train, right? It's a train. There were no trains in that area at this time.
That's so weird.
But many others witnessed this. They also, the horses ran all the way into town. So everybody woke up hearing this noise, hearing anything. No train there. 15 years later, the town council sells the land, promises the rights to it. They basically eminent domain, but the Welsh equivalent of it. And they build train tracks right through that area. And the first train comes through. And it does the exact same thing. All the horses scatter, run into town. Same noise, same everything. So, Erica, a ghost train from the future.
Marty McFly would be terribly impressed at this
moment. I was about to say, Back to the Future, right? You know, is that Doc Brown coming through?
I was going to, you know, I also kind of wonder, I don't know if you looked this up, was there ever a train accident there?
Not any time since, no.
So. Weird. That is so... That's what gets me into that alternate dimension, like, shift thing. Like, did something pass universe-wise close to each other or something?
Yeah, was that deja vu? You know, pre-deja vu? Was that...
Whatever the pre-deja vu words are, French listeners, travelers, tell us.
Did he have some sort of strange psychic ability that he didn't know? But the whole
he wasn't the only one that saw it, so you can't say that.
Yeah, and then was it some sort of, like I said, ours glitches in the Matrix that he just happened to lean into someplace where time traveled a little different than that? So, one of the craziest stories I've ever read.
So bizarre to me.
And I have newspaper accounts for that. So it's
That's weird. Well, at least now all the ghosts are gone. Thank God.
Yeah. So you've visited all the ghosts. So it's
you've this you was the best way I've ever visited ghosts before in my life. I love it. Yeah. Let's do that again.
So all right. So now I have to tell you a poem. All right. This is a Christmas poem that became a carol. And it was really popular in the 1830s and all the way through the Victorian times. And at one point, it was listed as the most popular Christmas carol of all time, according to a couple newspapers of the time.
Okay.
I don't know why we don't know it anymore. So I'm going to read the poem first, and then I'm going to tell you the story of it.
Okay. I was hoping you were going to say, and then I'm going to sing the carol.
We would lose every member of our audience the minute I tried to sing a note.
Except for Jake. I don't think Jake's going to go anywhere.
Jake, we love you, buddy. Ride or die, Jake. Ride or die.
Ride or die, Jake.
All right. So
Rick would probably stay too. I'm going to call out the ones that I know would be like, I'm going to just stay.
Yeah. Just whatever. Whatever. It's Mark. Indulge him. So
yeah.
Anyone that survived my system shock episode. So from my system shock mini said, all right. Well, the mistletoe hung in the castle hall. The holly branch shone on the old oak wall. And the baron's retainers were blithe and gay in the keeping of their Christmas holiday. The baron beheld with a father's pride his beautiful child, Lord Lovell's bride. While she with her bright eyes seemed to be the star of the goodly company. Oh, the mistletoe bough, I'm weary of the dancing now, she cried. Here tarry a moment, I'll hide. And Lovell, be sure, thought the first to trace the clue to my secret lurking place. Away she ran, and her friends began each tower to search and each nook to scan. And young Lovell cried, oh, where do you hide? I'm lonesome without you, my own dear bride. Oh, the mistletoe bough. They sought her that night. They sought her the next day. And they sought her in vain when a week passed away. In the highest, the lowest, the loneliest spot, young Lovell sought wildly, but found her not. And the years flew by, but their grief at last was told as a sorrowful tale long past. And when Lovell appeared, the children cried, see the old man weeps for his fairy bride. Oh, the mistletoe bough, old chest that had long lain hid, was found in the castle. They raised the lid, and a skeleton form lay moldering there. Oh, sad was her fate. In sporting jest, she hid from her lord in that old oak chest. It closed with a spring and dreadful doom. The bride lay clasped in her living tomb. Oh, the mistletoe bough. So
that got dark.
Yeah.
Really dark. I was like, at first I'm listening going, you know what? This is kind of neat. This is sweet. I mean, a little, cringy, but sweet. And then I was like, what?
Yeah.
Okay, so
the festive season is perfect about a story, of the undead. Come on, so
a story of playing hide and seek in the wrong place and never being found. Yep.
So, now there's some. Listen up, gang. We're gonna go on a little bit of a ride here. So, Bramshill House in Hampshire is the claimed home of this festive spirit, right? Supposedly this house has 14 different ghosts, making it one of the most haunted houses in the UK. But for Christmas sake, we're going to just boil in on this one.
Okay.
So Supposedly in the early 17th century, a young girl named Anne Cope was due to be married at the house on Christmas Day. Now, that alone sounds terrible, right? If you're making everybody work on Christmas for your wedding. Yeah, but I don't think that's her. I think that's the Lord, because the Lord of the Manor has to have a feast every Christmas. That's expensive. He has to have a feast every wedding. That's expensive. If you can get a 2-for-1.
It's clever. Very clever. Right? If that was the reason.
Yep. And according to another version of the story, she was 16. This was the day she turned 16. So boom. And a birthday feast. 3-for-1. Come on.
3-for-1. None of that's creepy. All of it's creepy.
Yeah, exactly. So basically her and her husband take the vows on Christmas Day, and she's supposed to be escorted to the marital bed, which if you're a 16-year-old girl, you know, marrying maybe the love of your life, but probably not, you're going to be like, hey, let's have a game before I get forced to bed. Let's go play hide and seek in this big mansion. And I'm going to go hide. You all count to 5 million and then come find me.
5 million. Yes, I'm sure that's exactly what she said.
Five minutes, 10 minutes, whatever. Give me some time here. You know, I just need a few minutes. And of course, everybody's like, oh, she's so cute. Yay, yay, yay. And she disappears. And they search up and down. And everybody's like, hey, wait a minute. A couple hours have passed. This ain't fun anymore. Where the hell is she? And supposedly 50 years after her disappearance, and this guy, you know, he never remarried. He never did anything. And he was just miserable. And supposedly he kind of knocks through some oak paneling and finds a secret door. And there's this big elaborate chest and her inside. And supposedly claw marks on the lid. So that
I don't love that. No.
Yeah. So now there is the fleur-de-lis room there supposedly has many sightings of a lady in white.
Of course.
And famously, Michael the First of Romania, he was staying there and he has to be moved to a different room because he kept being disturbed by this young woman in white who came through his walls every night. So now, if you go to Bramshill House today, they have an eerie chest on display in the entrance. And they say that they tell the tale of the ghostly bride at Christmas. Here's where we get history mixing with this, right? Kind of blowing it up, because what else would Christmas be if I don't get to ruin a few ghost stories?
Right? Okay, go for it.
All right. So there are many plot holes here. So
from you wouldn't say, go ahead.
I wouldn't say. So Anne Cope, there's no record of this. Genevieve Orsini was married in 1727, but she didn't hide or die in that house. She was actually in Italy, and her chest was brought there from Italy. That is her chest, not Anne Cope from the UK.
Okay.
Now, in another version, Anne is named Genevieve. And that's an Italian story. So some people say, oh, it's an Italian story brought here to the UK. We talk about, oh, it happened right here. But that poem and that chest was first documented in 1883. And that is in the history of Bramshill. And that's where it was basically, supposedly the original chest was large enough to fit, quote, a woman of comely proportions.
I wonder what a woman of comely proportions meant back then. Now, I'm sure that is also cringy.
Yep, I'm sure it is. But that actually got removed by Sir Denzel's Cope widow in 1812. She's like, I'm tired of this chest and all these stories about this ancestor of his that died here. Get this freaking thing out. So this new chest was brought in from Italy, and it may have had the real tale. But even then, so if that's the case, then how did that tale come over? All this,
So, you know, we're going to eventually have to do an episode on cursed and haunted objects because that opens a whole Pandora's box that we don't have time for in this episode because we only have a couple minutes left.
Yep. So that tale, basically 19th century songs, poems, etchings all over about this tale. And it first comes into light in like the 1809 under the title The Melancholy Occurrence. And then more songs, more poems, and that 1830s version, The Mistletoe Bough by Sir Henry Bishop. That's what I read. And many knew its lyrics by heart at that time. It's,
you know,
yeah, it's crazy. At Bawdrip Rectory, which is in the Somerset village of Bawdrip, they claim that they had the Lovell family and that it was their story. And it's Marwell Hall in Hampshire and Castle Hannock in Cornwall and Exton Hall in Rutland have all said that they are the place with the mistletoe bride or the mistletoe bow. It's like, okay.
That seems weird, but...
Yeah.
I will say that that is fascinating.
I'm going to see if we get Destiny to record the song.
Ooh, Destiny, call out. You got to record that for us, please. Yeah. That would be amazing, and we could share it with our listeners. So,
yeah. Mark, maybe that'd be a nice, be a nice Christmas holiday Yule present for everybody. So, man. Anyway, so. There have been some recent versions of it. I'll try to put one of the versions links to it here. So, but yeah, Erica, you were visited by four ghosts and you had a Christmas carol. So
I did. And with that, I now want to go eat my giant marshmallows because as we started this and brought this full circle, travelers, we've given you several places to visit, including in England, which I love the UK, so absolutely, if you get a chance, go visit there. We have given you some absolutely horrifying holiday ghosts, which can only be brought to you by the amazing Mark Muncy. And we're excited to bring you some more creepy, weird stuff this month, including, we're hoping a couple of guests, you know, schedules can be fun. Yeah. But Mark, so what do you want to tell our travelers as we leave this particular episode?
Well, like I said, travelers, you've got plenty of places to visit from this. We've got the wonderful Alcatraz, which does take tours. You can book ahead. Definitely book ahead. You can't just go there. And also same with the Lady in Brown. You've got to go actually to that manor's website to book your tour. I will put the links to all these places in the notes. And Barn Shell for the Mistletoe Bough, if you'd like. The Queen Mary. They do a Christmas Eve ghost tour so that you can look for Jackie yourself. And with all that, enjoy yourselves this holiday season. Whatever you want to do, but enjoy good spooky ghost stories. Enjoy a fun festive times. Eat your mistletoe. No, wait. Don't eat mistletoe. It's poison.
No, don't. What are you doing?
No, Krampus. I meant eat turkey, eat stuffing, eat all the ham, and eat all the jello.
Okay, guys,
whatever.
Sometimes Mark just goes out on a whim, and we're going to pretend like that didn't happen. Mark, you got to sing us out before you do more damage.
All right. Well, thank you all so much again. Thank you, patrons, for keeping us afloat. We especially love you all during the holidays because, hey, it's a gift, and you guys keep giving. But thank you, thank you, thank you. When you're out on the road and you're doing these ghost tours and you're going out listening for Christmas carols and all that, make sure that if you do go play hide and seek, don't play it with a little girl who giggles in a pool. Don't play it with a ghost train from the future. And always, always remember, we'll see you on the other side.
This isn't just a game, it's a once-in-a-generation event. The Harlem Globetrotters 100-year tour. Celebrate 100 years of high-flying dunks, 100 years of show-stopping moves, and 100 years of changing the game. Bring the whole family and be part of the legacy. This game is once in a century. Be there at Schottenstein Center on December 27th. Go to HarlemGlobetrotters.com for your tickets to the 100-year tour.